The Bad Apples, Episode 14, Season 2. Today we're going to talk about portable operating systems. No, this is not going to just be a rehash of what I already talked about on my Hacker Public Radio episode about Slax, the portable Slackware system. This is going to be something completely different, concentrating on a lot of different aspects of portable operating systems. Let's do it. So before I get into portable operating systems, which, by the way, is just a fascinating subject to me, I wanted to take a moment to acknowledge that I've got listeners, because it struck me, I got a couple of emails recently that people were just kind of basically introducing themselves, saying, hi, just found your show, you know, stuff like that, and that was really cool to me, and I wanted to make sure that I was actually recognizing that people are tuning in, and I think it's really cool that people are listening. I love that people are enjoying the show, so, you know, very good, very happy about that, and hello, nice to meet you. Okay, so enough of that. One of the guys who emailed me was named Don, and he pointed out that he might have found the show earlier if I had thought to include the word Linux in the title, which was a really good point. Of course, I'd gotten the domain name a long time ago, The Bad Apples, so I didn't really, you know, that didn't play in, but I could still call the podcast something different, like The Bad Apples Linux Podcast, or The Bad Apples Linux User Podcast, like a lot of Linux links, you know, a lot of Linux links, Linux User Podcast, but, yeah, I never thought to include the title, the word Linux in the title. That's a good idea, and maybe I'll change the name a little bit to reflect that, at least on you know, in the RSS feed, so that if people are doing just a general RSS search, then maybe they'll find me. I did add the show to some service, some place called techpodcasts.com, which I find to be kind of a disappointing, on one hand, a disappointing name for a website, because I don't know, there aren't that many shows on there that seem to interest me, but then I'm really only interested in the Linux ones usually, so. But that was the podcast network, I believe, that I found a great podcast that used to run last year called Open Source, or Open Source Trunk, Open Source Trunk. And I think it's opensourcetrunk.com. I don't know. I'll try to link to it in the show notes. And that was a really good podcast out of, like, Belgium or something. The guy would always drink a different kind of European beer, and he'd review different open source applications. And he was doing it for a while, and then he just kind of had to quit because he was doing, you know, he had to find time for his programming and stuff like that, which is always understandable. Podcasting is takes a lot more time, I think, sometimes than one realizes at first. So that was a good show. And then through the Tech Podcast Network, I also found just recently a show called Alterna Geek. And I'm really kind of liking that show. You should check it out if you haven't heard of it. I had not heard of it at all. It's not anywhere on, like, the Linux link, which is where I find out about most of my Linux podcasts. So check out the Alterna Geek. They do a lot of cool stuff. And in fact, I'm ripping off one of their topics or a subtopic of theirs, one of their main topics as a subtopic for this show, for this episode. So check them out. I think it's probably alternageek.com, I guess. But yeah, give them a listen. They're pretty good. So let's talk about operating systems. Portable operating system that I'm going to rip off from Alterna Geek's podcast to talk about first are the web-based operating systems. And there were actually quite a few of these, apparently, that, again, I hadn't really heard of, wasn't really aware of it. And I'm fascinated by the idea, and I'm interested in it. and probably like a lot of other people who find it fascinating, I really doubt I'm going to use it very often. But if you can imagine Google Docs, Google Sheets, and Google that stuff in a slightly less shareable form, you can basically imagine what a web-based OS might look like. And the one that I was using is called iOS, which is eyeos.com if you just want information about it, or .info if you actually want to use it. Which seems a little bit backwards to me, but whatever. So if you go to iOS.info, you'll get a login prompt. If you go to iOS.com, you'll get information about this idea. And there are others. There was UOS. I didn't really check that one out too much. There were some others, and you can, obviously I don't want to rehash what Alterna Geek said on their latest show, so I'm not going to. I think it was episode 32 or 31. Check those out, and you'll hear about more web-based operating systems. But just to give you an idea of what these operating systems are like, which I don't really feel like Alterna Geek did so much as to just kind of review the different ones out there, which was certainly helpful. But I'm here to add to their segment, essentially, by saying that I've tried iOS, and I have used it both at work and at home. And I'm pretty impressed. I mean, like I say, I still don't imagine myself using it if for no other reason than because I have operating systems at home that I would much rather use than a web-based one. And I just don't see myself, you know, using this with any great amount of regularity. And at work, you know, at work I could see myself using this at work, to be honest. Whether or not, I mean, I might not, because I also have VMware, or a Parallels, rather, partition, a virtual machine. Nevertheless, if you go to iOS.info, you'll see a really nice-looking and professional-looking login screen, and it asks you for your username and your password. If you haven't signed up with them yet, it's quite easy to do so. They don't ask you for a lot of stuff at all. It's just, you know, put in your name, your username, your display name, and your password, I think, is literally all they ask you for. They don't require that you give them your email address. They don't require anything like that. And from there, the inside of your browser becomes a desktop. So if you could, even if you wanted, you know, you could turn off your navigation, the button bar and the bookmark bar on your browser, and you would have almost a full screen desktop, and everything within that browser becomes completely, I mean, it's a desktop. It's got really nice looking desktop art. It's got on the desktop itself, there are three folders by default. There's the home folder, there's a trash folder, and there's a little software box. Now, the software, I thought at first might be their gateway to a repository or something, which it is not. It is the applications that you have installed by default. I cannot and have not yet found where to install or how to install new applications, so that's a bit of a weakness. And maybe it's not possible yet. Maybe they haven't. I thought that I'd heard that you could install new applications, but maybe that was a different web-based OS. At the top of the desktop, there's a little, I guess, a kicker or a dock or whatever you would want to call it, and it's got various categories: favorites, office, network, accessories, games, and system and places. And these are obviously, as you might guess, little drop-down menu kinds of things, which are really, really tastefully done. They're really nicely designed little menus. And you can choose whatever activity you want to engage in. And you can do all kinds of things. You can do word processing, internal messaging. So if you're doing this, you know, if people are using this web-based OS, they can each email each instant message each other. It's got a little calendar in there. It's got a mail client, FTP client, just everything you can really think of, except with a notable exception, and this is really the first thing that turned me off of iOS anyway. There's no sign of even really just anything terminal related. I couldn't quite imagine using an OS without a terminal on an everyday basis. That I don't think I could do that. And I do believe that there is a web-based OS that actually does have a terminal emulator within it, and I think it might have been the UOS or something like that. But like I say, Alternate Geek Podcast episode 31 or 32, they're out there. Just even just looking at their show notes, if you want the links, although the show is really good too. So, I mean, don't just steal their links. Listen to their show. There is a process manager so that if you need to force quit something on your side, you can. There's system preferences, which gives you a little bit of control over things. And you can log out and close session. That's always a good thing to have. And a little about me, and that's it. And, I mean, it's a really cool little operating system. The dragging and dropping is fully functional. It's as if though you're looking at a computer. It's really pretty cool. It's what I would call lightweight, I guess. I mean, if you're thinking about, for instance, Thunar versus Conqueror, this would be on the Thunar end. And that's not to say there's anything wrong with Thunar, but, you know, I mean, you're looking at this, the file manager, and there's just not that much. You know, you've got some folders. There's not a clear way on making a new folder. You just, if you right-click, then you can create a folder. There's not a lot of menus in this design at all, which I find fascinating. It's also a little bit of a problem, I think, because there's no help file at all that I can find. It's a fascinating little concept. I could really see myself shopping around for more web-based operating systems and possibly starting to use one or two rather than, for instance, working at home on one computer, going to work and trying to remember, you know, to bring the files with me or to make sure that they've been uploaded to some place. Or if I'm at work, I'm working in a parallels partition, and then I have to make sure that I either upload it to something or put it back out on a USB drive so that I can have access to it once I get back home. I mean, if you do it all within your little web operating system, web-based operating system, you open it up, you work, you finish your work, and you're done. So it's really quite nice. And any file that you create and work on within your web operating system, you can simply right-click on that and click on download file, and voila, it's out of the web-based OS and on your normal computer. It's a great little system. It's definitely usable. I'm going to update my index.html page for this episode within the WebOS, so give it a shot. It's a really fascinating concept. It's really fun to play around with, and I guess that about covers web-based OSs. Operating system available to us if we're not able to bring our own computer around with us to someplace is an operating system called, what was it? Oh yeah, Unix. You might have heard of it. Apparently there's this OS out there. It's called Unix, and you can log into it remotely. So if you have your own server, obviously you could do this with any amount of complexity that you desire. You also have things to worry about, security, stuff like that. But if you've got a static IP address, or if you set up some kind of intermediate service so that you can get something like a static IP address, then certainly you could set that up for yourself and use that. You're probably aware of that. The thing that I've been doing lately, which you might not be aware of, is a shell account. And so there's this computer located somewhere, I think it's in Washington, actually. And they give out free shell accounts so that you can log in to their system. They're running alphas, running NetBSD. And you can log in, you can get an account there, and you'll have access to different things, games, little text-based games, email, chat rooms, bulletin board, Gopher space. You can make your own Gopher page, various programming utilities, and a community. So that if you are learning programming or you are learning sysadmin kind of stuff, whatever, you know, you've got people there. You've got a bulletin board that you can post to. Stuff like that. And it's really cool. It's just a shell account. I don't believe that you can install Xorg and start, you know, really pimping it out like you could your own server. But you have your shell account, and you can, I think with a donation, you can even start installing your own software. And you might not even, it might not even require a donation. I can't remember. I'm a member, and I joined a little while ago, so I don't really remember exactly what the rules about, you know, like what you can and can't do before or after you give a donation. So, and the donation that you have to give is not much. I think it's $36 for lifetime membership. So, I mean, I paid that and pretty early on and never really looked back. So you can certainly do that if you want to. The website to check that kind of thing out, at least the one that I go to, is SDF, as in Super Domain Fortress, .lonestar.org. I spoke about them a little bit in Season 1, but since all of Season 1 episodes are pretty much lost, or gone, or whatever, then now I'm talking about them again. But that's all I had to say about them. So it's sdf.lonestar.org. It's a shell account on a Unix machine somewhere. And it's a great place to put your, you know, any files that you want to have access to and don't necessarily want to have on your work computer. It's a great way to do that. So check that out. Oh, look at the time. Yep, it's definitely time for a coffee break. So get a cup of coffee, and we'll continue our look at portable operating. Okay, so the original idea for this whole segment was USB drives and Linux specifically on USB drives. That was what I needed. I had come to a point where I realized that I was not doing as much music-related stuff as I would like, and to have an entire partition on one of my computers just for basically recording a podcast. That's really about all I've done with audio lately. It seemed a little bit excessive. So I decided that I would go out and look for a way to get my mixing tools onto a bootable operating system. And one of the requirements for me was definitely that it was not going to be a live CD. And I say this because live CDs are generally quite slow. And especially with audio, the last thing in the world you need is, to be waiting around for your operating system to find whatever information it needs off of a CD drive. So I needed quicker performance. And even this live CDs that you can preload into RAM, I mean, that would be a lot faster because once it's loaded, you're just basically running off of RAM. So that's nice, but still, with audio where it needs to use a lot of that RAM for audio stuff, you don't really want to be running your OS out of that same RAM necessarily. I needed it to be on a live USB drive, a pen drive, as I've come to call it, mainly because one of my biggest resources was linuxpendrives.com. So pen drive, that's what I'm calling it now. So the pen drive Linux distributions are not as I don't know, they're not as ubiquitous or as popular, I guess, as I would have imagined. Just knowing how Linux really seemed to just pioneer, if not invent, the idea of a proper, you know, live CD, an environment, an OS that you could run off of your CD drive. I would have kind of thought, okay, it's, you know, 2008 now, so surely we must have all switched over to live pen drives instead. But not really. So, the best resource that I've found for it, like I say, is linuxpendrive.com. This is a site dedicated to the very idea of running Linux off of a pen drive. And they have a couple of tutorials on there from both the Linux and the Windows perspective, so that whether you're running Linux or running Windows and need to run Linux, you can figure out a way to get a Linux OS onto a USB drive. The theory is quite simple, and if you look at most of the tutorials, it will make it seem very simple. The actual application of this may or may not be so simple, and you probably are already starting to guess why. Obviously, the BIOS settings of the computer, the tolerance of that computer's BIOS to whether it really wants to boot off of a USB port or not. So there's a lot of interesting pitfalls that I made along the way that I will talk a little bit about here. If you haven't already, if you're not a listener of Hacker Public Radio, you can certainly run over to hackerpublicradio.com or .org and check out the March 17th episode, which is by me, and it is on Slacks. So if you haven't listened to that yet, you should. But I'm not going to talk about Slacks right now because I talked about it there. But Slacks is definitely one of the most, it seems to be the most robust USB operating system in terms of bootability. I could get Slacks to boot off of almost every computer I plugged it into, one way or another, whereas all the other operating systems that I tried on a USB pen drive, I could not necessarily get to work, you know, every time. But Slacks really, really just, I don't know whether it's because it uses Lilo for the bootloader, or whether it was just written that way or what, but it really seems to be pretty robust. So if you're having a really hard time, check that out. Now, the one I'm actually using, even as I speak, is off of a 2 GB pen drive. The theory of it, again, is very simple. You basically take a live CD or a live CD ISO, and you can move the files over to the pen drive. You have to make the pen drive bootable. You'll have to partition the pen drive so that you can have, you know, a normal FAT16 or FAT32 file system at the front, so that, you know, just any computer will recognize it and boot up off of it. And then you have to switch it over and have a Linux partition containing all the real information. So there's quite a bit of file system hackery, I guess, that you have to do. The tutorials all tell you how to do this, and there are a couple of different tutorials. There's one for Knopix or Knopix. There's one for Ubuntu and or Debian. There's one for Mandriva, which I'll talk about in a minute. There's a PC Linux OS and a Pendrive Linux OS, which they made based off of the Mandriva. So Mandriva has a really cool live CD floating out there called MCN Live. This MCN Live CD is basically designed for the sole purpose of making a live USB distribution or a live CD distribution of your own. So it's quite a bit like Fedora Respin, or Ubuntu Remastering, but it is specifically designed so that you will end up with a fully customized either live CD or live USB pen drive. So I downloaded that, and I customized the system there in the live CD, and then you make an ISO out of that, and then you select make USB pen drive, and it takes that ISO and arranges it such that it will be a bootable system. Didn't work for me. And it's no fault of MCN Live or Mandriva. It is simply that the one computer that I really needed this to work on just was not working with that. It would work on other systems that I would try it on, but the BIOS, apparently, of my trusty Sony VAIO is picky. And unless it is Slax using a Lilo bootloader, this thing will not boot off of it. Whether I could have modified the Mandriva pen drive image and installed Lilo onto it, I am not sure. I should have tried it, but I was really kind of in the mindset of getting this thing done. So I just kind of abandoned that effort pretty quickly. But I still have the live CD itself around, and I intend on making a Mandriva-based live USB OS for myself just to play around with it. Because it's a really handy tool. It's a really great idea, too. I mean, that's just a really cool idea. So the other one, of course, is Canopix, which, I mean, that's one of the best live distros out there. It seems to be pretty robust, too. It just wasn't doing what I was wanting it to. And, again, it was just an issue of getting the computer. The main computer I really wanted it to work on was just not cooperating, so I kind of ditched that idea, too. Pendrive Linux has their own little OS that they respun out of the MCN Live distro, so you could try that if you wanted to. There's the PC Linux OS Mini Me, little miniature ISO that PC Linux OS came out with. They've got that for a USB drive, so you can do that. And again, the tutorials are all at pendrivelinux.com, so check it out. So how did I get mine to work? Well, I had to resort to sort of a little bit of trickery. So what I did was I went ahead and modified the Kubuntu Live CD and did the tutorial on how to get that onto a USB drive. That worked fine, but it still wouldn't boot. By this time, I knew that things weren't going to boot because I'd already been through every other tutorial imaginable. So I tried it on other computers, so I knew that they were booting. It was just my particular computer was not. So at this point, I was far enough along to realize that that the problem was not with me, it was not with the tutorials, it was with the main computer that I was going to be using this on. So I took the Kubuntu thing and the live CD, did what was needed to do to make that onto a flash drive, and then constructed a CD, just a bare-bones bootable CD from the MCN Live live CD, and I created a Grub menu, a Grub bootloader. And for the Grub bootloader, I gave myself the option to boot off of the kernel that I knew resided within the USB stick. So basically what is going on is I'm booting via CD at first, and then the first option on there is to boot to the USB drive. So after you get over the initial booting, you're running entirely off the USB drive. You're no longer running off of the CD. And it works perfectly. You just need the CD to make it smooth. Now, after this, I found out from someone about a place called Flash PCs, and I can't for the life of me remember that URL, but I will put it in the show notes. And Flash PCs actually does the exact same thing, only a lot nicer than how I did it. And so I purchased from them for $98 a 2-gig thumb drive loaded with, again, Kubuntu. And it comes with a nice little business card size CD. So it'll fit just in your wallet or in your pocket along with your thumb drive. Because a full-size CD, I mean, that's just big enough, it'll fit in the back pocket, but if you sit down, it'll break the CD potentially. So this little business card CD is perfect. And you pop that into the machine that you want to boot up off of, pop your USB thumb drive into the USB port, and suddenly you're booting, you know, via a CD off of your thumb drive, and it works perfectly. The exciting thing about this is that once you're in your environment, it runs marvelously fast. I would say for most things that I do, I don't even notice that I'm not running off of my hard drive. I mean, it's a flash drive, so, you know, it's pretty quick. The transfer speed, I don't know if that's, I mean, I doubt that USB 2.0 matches ATA or serial ATA. But the other than that, you know, you're never waiting for the CD to spin up or anything. In fact, once you're booted, you can eject the CD, which I usually do because I find that shutting down with the CD still in the drive seems to be a little bit of a problem. But once you're there, you can create yourself a user. They give you a default user called Ubuntu, and there's no password, so you can change the password and give it, you know, make it something useful. And I went ahead and made myself another user because that's what I do with Ubuntu, because I don't like the whole way that they have their sudo thing set up. So I made myself a new user, and immediately as root went into add remove software and started basically creating a new or a work environment for myself. Now, since I'd purchased this particular USB stick from Flash PC, I went ahead and just copied it over to a backup USB drive because I didn't want to screw anything up. And I thought maybe they might have customized their version of it for the USB drive. But anyway, I went ahead and added and removed programs, put on all the music software that I knew that I would need, keeping in mind that a smaller, you know, system would give me more room for my data. And so now I have basically Ubuntu Studio or Dynabolic or Studio 64 without the excess stuff, but with all the functionality. You know, I find that I can use it just for everything that I do related to audio. So if I'm editing my podcast, or if I'm editing some promo for someone, or if I'm working on some sound, I can just boot right up off of this USB drive. I can do absolutely everything I need to. It's a persistent image, so everything I save is right there when I get back to it. If I have to shut down, come back to it later. There have been no problems with it at all. I've been using it quite frequently. In fact, I've been overusing it, really. I find myself booting into it just to kind of give it a good test, you know. So I'm booting into it for things that I probably would not boot into my music partition, if you would, you know, normally. I mean, things like, you know, just word processing and data management and things like that I'm doing here anyway, because I figure why not try it out. But so far, I've had no problems with it. It has been running like a charm. The only exception to that would be shutting down. When I shut down, if I have the CD in the drive, it does seem to throw off the shutdown process. I'm not sure why. Haven't really looked at it that much. I just know to eject the CD once I've loaded, which I typically do anyway, because I usually have to load, you know, some file off of a DVD-R or something that I have. So I usually eject that pretty quickly. Media playback is great. Obviously, I'm editing audio in this environment, so it must be good. But I can also watch DVDs or listen to music, stream audio, whatever I want to do right here as well. Performance is not an issue. So, if you have any kind of specialized niche activity that you find yourself doing that you don't necessarily want to integrate with your normal operating environment, but you do want to have access to, you might look at this kind of portable Linux distribution. Hopefully this is where, you know, the concept of live CDs will be going. Hopefully we will see less, you know, live CDs and more live pen drive images. I think that would be really cool for a company to have a live pen drive image that people could download and just DD onto another, you know, onto their pen drive. Suddenly they could reboot and they'd be running Linux at not live CD speed. And I think that would be really cool. Now, whether people would know how to get that image onto the pen drive like they would need to. I don't know if you were to try to do that on Windows. I have no idea how that would be, and I know a lot of people who try live CDs or the Windows users trying to find the distro that's right for them. But it would still be a cool option, I think, because there would be people, either very adventurous Windows users or just, you know, everyday Linux users like you and me, who would love to just download, you know, the Fedora 9 Alpha with KDE 4 and put that on a live USB stick rather than having to run that off of a live CD. And I would love to be able to run Fedora 9 Alpha off of a pen drive. I would probably use it quite often rather than, you know, installing the alpha onto a drive that I have, because I don't want to keep repartitioning, you know, my production hard drive. So if you are a Linux developer or are involved in a Linux distribution, then think about putting your live environment out as also a live pen drive and image as well, because I think that would be a hit. It would certainly be a hit with me, but probably for other people too. They're really cool. If you haven't tried running Linux off of a pen drive, I urge you to go out and try it right now. It's a cool experience, and you can't imagine the sense of power and security that it gives you when you walk to school or to work, and in your pocket you have either Slacks or Kubuntu or Mandriva or Canopix, just right there on a pen drive that you can put into any, practically any computer that you see, boot right up into it, and you're running your own very friendly, very familiar Linux distribution. Here, I guess I really probably have to note that the one exception to this entire rule are the Macintosh computers out there. Yeah. So ever since I started playing around with the different pen drive distributions, I have been trying to find a pen drive that I could plug into a Mac at work and boot into Linux and use Linux. And again, I don't want to do this off of the live CD, because live CD performance is not where it needs to be. I've tried them all. I've tried them with Macs. Macs will not boot off of a USB drive. They just don't want to do that. The possible exception here, I guess in theory, could be the Apple TV, because Apple TV is programmed to be able to boot off of, or at least recognize, drives from its USB port. That's the sole purpose of that USB port in the back, to plug in a hard drive and use that hard drive to update the system of the Apple TV. It's something that the Apple technicians do. So that would be the one possible exception, and I have not gotten near enough an Apple TV yet to be able to test this theory. I am going to attempt to test it as soon as I can. It's just that I don't have access to an Apple TV. But the Intel-based Macs, which is obviously what you would need to run one of these distributions off of, are not running open firmware any longer. They're running EFI firmware, and the EFI firmware you are locked out of. You cannot access that. So essentially, what would be BIOS settings on a PC, you cannot change on the new any Intel Mac. It just doesn't function the same way. I'm also going to attempt, although I really don't think it's going to work, to just get like some kind of FireWire to USB converter, like a hardware converter, and plug the USB drive into the FireWire port, because Macs are programmed out of the box to recognize the FireWire port as a bootable port. So these are some things that I'm playing around with. I still have not cracked into the system far enough to actually get any kind of success. So who knows what will happen. We'll see. But if you are using a Mac and want to boot into Linux off of a pen drive, you're kind of out of luck for now. But let me know if you stumble across any hack or big realization that would change that, because I would love to hear about it so that I could start booting up off of these drives at work. Well, it looks like it's about time for us to all part ways, you and me, dear listener. So, if you need to contact me, my email is gort.klaatu@gmail.com. That is gort, G-O-R-T, dot klaatu, K-L-A-A-T-U, at gmail.com. The website is thebadapples.info. The RSS feed is thebadapples.info/RSS.xml or thebadapples.info/aug.xml. I like to keep things simple. This music that you're hearing was done by Fat Chance Lester in New York City. The really bad, cheesy music that I played earlier is some royalty-free music designed for various productions. They're hilarious. I can't get enough of this stuff. If you've got any questions or comments, shoot me an email. If you have any suggestions, shoot someone else an email.